From the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies, this is Pardes from Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, Pardes alum. This week, Bahar. Summer's coming fast, and that means Executive Learning Seminar. This year, the subject is War and Peace, the Challenges of Sovereignty. The Executive Learning Seminar is made for you, anyone who wants to learn in Jerusalem at Pardes from the top teachers of Pardes. Come join us June 24th through 28th, and you will have a marvelous time. The seminar is also available in December if you can't make the June session. Check out all the details at the Pardes website. That's pardes.org.il. This week, Bahar with Rabbi Dr. Mish Hammer Kassoy. Rabbi Dr. Mish Hammer Kassoy is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Mish Hammer Kassoy.
Thank you, Larry. The Rambam, in his Gifts to the Poor, Chapter 7, Number 1, cites our Parsha as follows. It is a positive mitzvah to give tzedakah to the poor, according to what is fitting for the poor person, if she has the means to do so. As it said, you must open your hand and lend him with sufficient for whatever he needs. And as it is said, citing our Parsha, Leviticus 25:35, if your brother becomes impoverished and stumbles, you shall strengthen him and hold him as though a resident alien. Let him live by your side. Hechazakta bo ger v'toshav v'chai imach. V'ne'amar v'chai achicha imach. You shall let him live by your side as your kinsman. Anyone who sees a poor person begging and averts his eyes from her and does not give her tzedakah transgresses a negative mitzvah, as it is said. If, however, there is a needy person among you, one of your kinsmen, in any of your settlements in the land that the Lord and your God is giving you, do not harden your heart and shut your hand against your needy kinsperson. So the basics of tzedakah are learned out of this week's Parsha and some other verses in Deuteronomy 15. And this mitzvah of tzedakah is portrayed by the Rambam, both by the Rambam and in Deuteronomy, as a sort of straight-up poverty relief. Give a loan or a gift to relieve whatever is needed by the poor person. Indeed, the Rambam encourages us to be zealous about this mitzvah with some inspiring words in Chapter 10, Halacha Aleph. We must be careful to observe the mitzvah of tzedakah, more so than any other positive mitzvah, for tzedakah is a sign of the righteous lineage of Avraham Avinu. As it is said, Ki yedativ l'man asher yitzavet banav et beito, v'shamru derech Hashem lasot tzedakah u'mishpat. I have singled him out that he may instruct his children and his posterity to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is just, tzedakah. The throne of Israel is established, and the religion of truth stands only on tzedakah. As it is said in Yeshayahu, you shall be established through righteousness, tzedek. And Israel will be redeemed through tzedakah, as it is said also in Yeshayahu, Tzion b'mishpat tipadeh v'shaveha b'tzedakah. Sion will be saved by judgment and her repentant ones in tzedakah. Never has anyone become poor by giving to tzedakah, nor has anything bad ever come of it, nor has any harm occurred because of tzedakah, as it is said in Yeshayahu, the work of tzedakah is peace. Anyone who shows compassion, others will show compassion to him, as it is said, may God show you compassion and let your compassion increase. Unquestionably, tzedakah is a beautiful mitzvah with tremendous rewards. Not only does it provide relief of poverty, but in the words of Rav Yisrael Salanter, the material needs of my neighbor are my spiritual needs. It isn't hard to identify the spiritual benefits cultivated by giving tzedakah when it's done correctly. A sense of compassion and release and satisfaction in the material possessions you already have. A sense of thankfulness for your ability to give and help. The communal benefits are also massive, creating a community in which we look out for one another with caring and with love. And so it's funny then that today this mitzvah of tzedakah is a bit out of fashion. Many of you are already familiar with this very popular social justice parable. It goes like this. One summer in the village, the people gathered for a picnic. As they shared food and conversation, someone noticed a baby in the river, struggling and crying. The baby was going to drown! Someone rushed to save the baby. Then they noticed another screaming baby in the river, and they pulled that baby out. Soon more babies were seen drowning in the river, and the townspeople were pulling them out as fast as they could. It took great effort, and they began to organize their activities in order to save babies as they came down the river. As everyone else was busy in the rescue efforts to save the babies, two of the townspeople started to run away along the shore of the river. "Where are you going?" shouted one of the rescuers. "We need you here to help save the babies." "We're going upstream to stop whoever is throwing them in." Another version of a story that I heard has a person jump into the water alongside the baby. When the townspeople asked, this person shouted that he was teaching the babies to swim. The mashal and the nimshal are clear. The social activist should be careful not to get distracted or bogged down with poverty relief, but should instead focus on systematic change. Clearly, it's criminal to ignore the child in the river, but the story is told almost as a kind of chelm story. Anyone who merely works at poverty relief is ignoring what's really important. What does Jewish wisdom have to say about this parable? What about our parsha? I'd like to suggest, based on our parsha, that the answer is nuanced. More than any place else in the Torah, Parshat Bahar specifically reflects an early Jewish rendition of this river parable, one which shares much with the modern parable, but is invested with our own unique traditional wisdom. Rashi shares our parable based on the Midrash Halakha. Vehechezakta bo, you shall strengthen him. Do not leave him by himself so that he deteriorates in the world until he finally falls altogether, when it will be difficult to give him a lift. But support her from the very moment of the failure of her means. To what may this be compared? To an excessive load on the back of a donkey. So long as it's still on the donkey's back, one person is enough to take hold of the load and stabilize it and keep the donkey up. As soon as it's fallen to the ground, not even five people are able to set it on its legs. This parable is expanded by the Ashlich HaKadosh, Rav Moshe Ashlich, the 16th century Turkish Tzfat commentator, with another powerful metaphor. He tells the metaphor of a person trudging through very thick mud, stumbling as she goes. If you catch her before she falls, she can continue to safety. But if you let her fall so that the mud covers her clothes and her face and gets in up her nose, not only has she suffered terribly, cleaning her fully becomes nearly impossible. The moral of the story, according to the Midrash Halakha, Rashi and Ashlich, is early intervention. It actually emerges from a careful reading of the words of the verse itself. The double language, ki yamuch achicha umatayado imach. Matayado imach, he stumbles. You respond to the stumbling, says the verse, vehechezakta. You should strengthen or stabilize him. That is, don't let him fall. So the Torah's wisdom has been confirmed again and again through modern research. Early intervention for kids with special needs or at-risk kids has been demonstrated to be very cost-effective for the government. And it is with this in mind that the Israeli government has been steadily increasing, thankfully, the age for which free dental care is included in our basket of services. Similarly, more and more states in America have seen that providing housing support to populations endangered of homelessness is cheaper than treating them once they become homeless, dependent on drugs, and at risk of criminal behaviors. So early intervention, as suggested by Rashi, is a well-proven effective means of treating poverty or preventing poverty. Interestingly, Rashi does not cite the continuation of the Midrash Halakha. It goes like this. V'hechazakta bo, Tanya, minayin she'im hechazakta afilu dalad o chamisha pa'amim. Tachzor v'tachzok bo, Talmud lomar, v'hechazakta. Yachol afilu mafsito l'tarbut ra'ah talmud nilomar imach. That is, we need to provide support. How do we know that we need to support the person who's stumbling, not just once, but four or five times, as many times as necessary? Hechezakta, you should keep supporting him. However, says the Midrash, there's a risk of fostering dependency. Yachol afilu mafsido l'tarbut ra'ah, that he will go out to a bad culture. What is a bad culture? A bad culture is the idea of fostering dependency. Netanyahu has argued strongly and acted on his belief that a strong social security net is in danger of demotivating people from work and self-reliance. Once your support crosses this threshold, says the Midrash, you're no longer helping to prevent poverty. You're actually facilitating it. So the Torah, like the modern parable, endorses early intervention, even repeatedly, but also cautions us against creating dependency. And in fact, what Rashi and the Midrash are expressing in the micro is actually the macro message of the chapter 25 as a whole. Taken together, there are two sections in chapter 25, and taken together, they really reflect a vision for the economy as a whole. Let's begin with the second half, because that's the second half that mirrors our parable and deals directly with poverty. It's structured around a repeating verse, a sort of refrain: "Ki yamuch achicha," if your brother, your kinsperson becomes impoverished, and it's repeated four times in verses 25, 35, 39, 47. Each time, it reflects an increasing degree of severity. The individual finds himself or herself in straits. Her first responsibility is to herself. She needs to sell property to support herself. But the relative should help her redeem it. And if that doesn't work, in verse 39, you need a loan. Give the person a loan so that they can straighten themselves out. And if that doesn't work, in verse 39, the poverty will get worse. The person will have to sell herself into slavery. In the worst case scenario, in verse 47, the person may even find themselves selling themselves to slavery to a non-Jew. The Torah portrays poverty as a deteriorating cycle. Like the child drowning in the river, it's possible to emerge, but it isn't easy. You need the help of your family. It's they who should redeem your land and allow you to reside on it. With their help, you should be able to put the pieces back together. If your immediate family doesn't or is unable to help, the entire people of Israel is to see themselves as responsible. Without their help, we can expect matters to deteriorate, says the Torah. Further, getting out of poverty alone without outside assistance is incredibly difficult. In the words of our sages, Eina chavush motziat atzmo mibeit ha'asarim, the captive cannot break out of jail himself. Having examined the slippery slope of poverty, the first half of the chapter is more clearly understood. It rests on the biblical ideal of equal distribution of resources. Every family is bequeathed an ancestral plot when we enter the land, the capital with which we are supposed to make an honorable living. Self-reliance is an ideal. Each family is responsible for farming their land and making sure they're financially secure. But sometimes things will go wrong. Sickness, famine, a bad decision will result in a turn of fortunes. Says the Torah, money is power, and generally speaking, we can expect that the rich will get richer and the poor will get poorer. Therefore, the Torah states, in order to maintain a just society over the course of time, we need periodic resets, opportunities for the poor to emerge from the traps of poverty, not just to climb onto the riverbank, but to reestablish their footing on terra firma. In small increments, that means debt remission every 7 years with the Shemitah year. Every 50 years with the Jubilee year, that means reclaiming our ancestral land and farming it afresh. So the Torah lays out a full-blown system first, noting that poverty will get worse if untreated, and also suggesting a way to avoid creating poverty in the first place by making sure that resources are evenly distributed and that people have chances to press reset periodically. The genius of this system is accentuated to me by my recent reading of Globalization and Its Discontents by the Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz. One of his central theses is that the idea of a totally free market is a total illusion. An apparently free market is actually being directed, he argues, by the strongest powers in it, with the result that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. While as loyal capitalists, we're trained to believe that freer markets will maximize growth, and that will result in a bigger pie. Even a small slice of a bigger pie is better for everyone. The Torah cautions us the dangers of growing disparities in the distribution of wealth. So to summarize, the primary responsibility for economic well-being is on every individual. In the ideal world, there's no rich and no poor. Every family has equal plots and lands, plots of land and opportunity. But slips in fortune are inevitable. And they're not necessarily the fault of the poor person. They require the help of the people who are closest to you. And early intervention here is the key. And if they don't get help, we can expect that the situations will deteriorate. All of Am Yisrael is expected to step in and alleviate individuals who are in a bad situation. So the Torah certainly articulates a vision for systematic treatment of the root causes of poverty and implores us to work towards realizing it. And in fact, you see this also in the Rambam. When he cites our verse, the verse we've studied most closely, Leviticus 25:35, at the top is his famous ladder of tzedakah. Shmona ma'alot yesh b'tzedakah, zo l'mala mizo. There are 8 levels of giving tzedakah, one higher than the other. Ma'ala gdola she'ein l'mala mimeno, the very highest level, ze ha'machzik b'yad Yisrael shemach. That is helping the person, the Jew, who has become impoverished. V'noten lo matana o halva'a, o hosei mo shutafut, u'mamsi lo melecha, kedei lechazek et yado, ad shelo yitzterech levriyot. And he should give her, he should strengthen Lachzik, the fellow Jew, and give her a gift, a loan, a form of partnership, or find work for her until she's strong enough so that she does not need to ask for help. Of this it is said, V'hechezaktabo ger v'toshav v'chayimach. You should help, you shall strengthen the person, treating them as a resident alien, letting him live by your side. That is to say, hold him up so that he will not fall and be in need. Hechzik bo ad shelo yipol v'yitzterech. But in reflecting on the Rambam and his levels of tzedakah in particular, I find it profound that the remaining seven levels addressed underneath this top level focus not on the ways that tzedakah eliminates poverty, but first and foremost in the matter in which the tzedakah is given, in the ways that emphasize human dignity, generosity, compassion, that build a community of independence, of caring, of mutual responsibility, and non-judgmental love. Judaism shares so much with the modern liberal vision of economic justice and offers us inspiring wisdom. But perhaps what we need Jewish tradition for the most is to remind us of the great virtues of simply providing with compassion and generosity for people in need without overwrought calculus for whether or not we are providing systematic change at every turn. Early intervention is for sure our ideal, but if we've missed that opportunity, the Torah insists again and again that we must also be sure to pull our fellow creatures out of their troubles. Whether we compare them most to mud or to rivers or to falling off of a donkey, we cannot let people struggle alone. I close with the Rambam's blessing that Israel will only be redeemed through tzedakah. Tzion shall be saved in the judgment, her repentant ones in tzedakah. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Hammer Kassoy. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.